Hey everyone, before getting into the show, I just want to tell you about another great way to support Wisecrack by becoming a patron. We love recording the Squanch, and it's all of your amazing support that keeps us going. Patrons get access to exclusive patron-only releases, including special podcasts like Wisecrack Edition Extra, where I or Alec or other people have hour-long conversations with the writers, researchers, and directors to give you behind-the-scenes looks into how our YouTube videos get made. It's kind of like the Squanch, but all your favorite Wisecrack editions and the TV shows and movies you love. You'll get access to Wisecrack Edition Extra and everything else on our Patreon page. Plus, we're working on more exclusives each month. And hey, it's a great way to show your love. Whether we're making podcasts or videos, there's tons of people behind the scenes making Wisecrack content a reality. There's video editors like Ryan, thank you Ryan, audio editors like Andrew, thank you for cutting out all the parts where we sound stupid, to the producers who coordinate all this madness, thank you Emily, not to mention the directors, writers, researchers, and all that fun stuff. So check us out on patreon.com/wisecrack and consider becoming a patron. We'll throw that link in the description, so check it out. It would mean the world to us. And now on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to The Squanch, Wisecrack's Rick and Morty podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined here today by Wisecrack's video editor, Ryan.
Wubba lubba Satan.
And Wisecrack's content lead, Alec.
Ooh, glad to be here.
All right, so today we are breaking down, this is the last of our installment of the Wisecrack Squanch Crew's favorite episodes. We started off with Alec's favorite episode, then we went over to Ryan's favorite episode, and now we're doing my favorite episode, which is Rick and Morty Season 1, Episode 9, Something Ricked This Way Comes. But before we get into that, the guys over at Rick and Morty, Roiland and Co., released a new piece of content over social media entitled The Poop in My Pants, where Mr. Poopy Butthole looks at a photo album of the history of his marriage and him meeting his wife. And I suppose it was some sort of Thanksgiving thing to be grateful for. So since this is an update in the world of Rick and Morty, let's talk about that first before we dive into Something Ricked This Way Comes. I don't really have a lot to say about this. It seemed like maybe was... Okay, well, good. Alec, you just go. I'll shut up.
Well, hold on. What do you think it was?
I thought it was probably just an extended after-credits sequence of the season finale of Season 3 that they just had to cut for timing reasons, and now they just decided to release it during Thanksgiving because it works as a Thanksgiving thing. Because, I don't know, I think that the connection with Thanksgiving is a little tenuous.
Right, yeah. There is none.
Right. And but the social media chyron or like the statement on Facebook was that Mr. Poopy Butthole is reflecting on the things that he's thankful for. I get it, I suppose. But I guess my first question is, what are we supposed to take away from this at the end? He gets off the couch after having looked at the album and then he looks at his walking cane, but then moves past it. Are we just meant to believe that he looks at the history of his family, he gets invigorated by it, and now he's completely overcome his wounds from Beth having shot him and he no longer needs the walking cane anymore? Is that what this means?
Did he have a poop in his pants when he got up off the couch?
Does he always have poop in his pants? That's the real question.
Was sagging.
Right. I think that's the important question. Does he not always have a poop in his pants?
Right. I would like to know that too.
Well, we're going to have to, we'll get back to the Squanchers about that because we're going to have to look very closely at all the episodes which Mr. Poopy Butthole is there to truly discern whether or not there is a bulge in his pants the whole time.
I agree that it didn't do that much. It was just kind of whatever. I'm glad I got to hang out with Mr. Poopy Butthole and see his history of his family. But my theory is that they're like planting some sort of seed for the next season and that he's going to be a bigger character. And that, you know, I think they very deliberately showed that same scene where you saw Morty
proposing
to Mr. Poopy Butthole, you know, the same exact shot. I have a feeling that that's going to come back, or I hope it does. But if it doesn't, then I have no idea what to say about this.
My general reaction was, I thought they were going to have a twist at the end, but instead it just ended up being sad. So I was a little disappointed. But that being said, I rewatched it and like pressed pause on every single little frame. And there's a lot of great stuff in there, especially, I know we sort of collectively hate fan theories, but, you know, there's a lot of seeds for fan
theories. I do not collectively hate fan theories.
I think it's mostly Jared.
I like them and read them.
Jared here. But anyway, what's interesting about this is it becomes very sort of plottable as a timeline. So first of all, what I didn't realize the first time I watched it, this all happens after he gets shot, but before the after credit scene we saw. So in the after credit scene we originally saw at the end of the finale, he says, what'd you do? Like, I got a GED and got married and had a kid. I hope you didn't just waste your time doing nothing. So when he's in high school, that's not like him growing up. That is him going back to get his GED, meeting his wife. And you can tell because in one of the first of all, he has a cane in all of these little frames, or most of them. And then there is a Galactic Federation flag flying over Harry Herbson High School, which is the high school Morty goes to. There's also bugs in the little picture. They're riding bicycles. You can see a helicopter, and I think it's Rick and Jaguar or one of them flying. So like that's happening during the Jaguar episode. So there's all these little clues. Also, Mr. Poopy Butthole has a Galactic Federation rewards card that says C-137, which is very confusing. So I'm sure that's going to drive a lot of things. You also see in their sort of cap and gown photo, they're revolting against the Galactic Empire, murdering like one of the bugs. And Goldenfold is in the background going apeshit. There is a photo booth photo with their toxic selves as one of the frames. So all these events sort of happen during the course of season three. And I don't know, I think people are going to pick it apart and come up with new theories based on that. Also, apparently, Mr. Poopy Butthole's Jewish. We see his wedding. There's a rabbi. He's smashing the glass.
Yeah. Either that or his wife is Jewish and she just demanded that, yeah, a Jewish wedding.
That also...
So what's your fan theory, Yelich?
Well, I'm saying...
I don't think there's any theories. I mean, that's kind of like my cynicism about this whole thing is they're basically just giving fans fodder to theorize. I don't even think that they put a lot of thought into this. It's basically just... what I like to call
schmuck. I don't believe that.
See, I disagree with you, Ryan, that they're teasing that he's going to have a bigger role in the next season. I don't even think they've started writing next season. They have no idea what the fuck's going on next season. They basically just playfully created a timeline for Mr. Poopy Butthole and sprinkled in references from the show because they know that their fans will pick it apart to death, and they're basically just baiting them. And when you're just baiting people, that obviously it takes the fun out of it for me because to me it's very obvious that, oh, we haven't really thought about this, but we know that you guys will. So we're just going to sprinkle in references, not put a lot of thought about it, and let you guys go to town because you guys are going to have a lot of shit to think about because it's going to take us forever to get season four up and running.
Well, I'm curious to see episode one of season four because I'm hoping you're going to be wrong.
I did have one theory that fell apart as soon as I put that timeline together, which was Mr. Poopy Butthole is from another dimension where humans are all poopy butthole people. And the reason is because the woman he falls in love with looks a lot like Summer. And I just mean she has a pink shirt and a ponytail, but sitting in high school. So that was the only thing that I possibly speculated about, but it doesn't really make sense.
Okay. Well, if anybody has other thoughts on the poop in my pants, since it'll probably be the only piece of new content we'll have for a while, please send us an email. But without further ado, we're going to talk about my favorite episode, Rick and Morty, Season 1, Episode 9, Something Ricked This Way Comes. As always, we're going to go around and discuss people's impressions, having revisited the episode for the first time in a while. So, Ryan, what do you think about this episode?
I liked it way more than I remembered liking it. The Plutonian subplot is so fucking awesome and funny. Like, and then the Satan one, or the devil shop, pretty funny, but like that's more clever. Like I'm like, ah, okay, that was a good one. But whereas the Plutonian thing, I was laughing my ass off.
Okay, cool. And Alec,
I also think I liked it better, and specifically for the Plutonium plot, it takes on a new relevance in 2017 that I appreciated it more than the original time.
How?
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Obviously, there's always been people claiming to be scientific and just espousing shitty ideas. But this happens a lot more in 2017, I feel like, especially with the rise of like flat earthers and all that shit.
Flat earthers? People really think that?
Wait,
now?
you don't know about this, Ryan?
How do you not know about this, Ryan? I feel like you would be the person that would know about this more than anyone.
I heard that one NBA player commented in an interview, but I didn't know other people really thought that.
There is a guy on a steam-powered rocket shooting up some amount of feet, 1,000 feet, 1,500 feet, a lot of feet. The rocket has sprayed on it Research Flat Earth. It was funded by some organization named that. And he's shooting up there to prove that the Earth is flat and to get famous. And I just get sucked in a rabbit hole where I'll read flat Earth theories for like 30 minutes. And again, they use very sort of scientific reasoning, but just like liberally like ignore whatever doesn't fit that theory or just sort of arbitrarily make shit up. It's very much like Jerry just being like, well, science is debatable and I'm debating it. They do a little more work, to be fair.
It's interesting you say that because I think that and we'll get to that subplot, but I think that this subplot was more of a reaction to things like fracking or people that are climate change skeptics.
Yeah,
stuff
I totally
like
agree.
That.
Yeah.
Wait, you think that this subplot is about that?
Absolutely. I think it's clear as day.
Yeah, you I agree with Jared.
Isn't it just about Pluto?
We'll get there. So all right, I just want to say what my thoughts about this episode. It's my favorite episode. I think that it's got all the things that make a great Rick and Morty episode. I think it's probably one of the smartest episodes. And yes, I probably get off more than your average people on the clever aspect of it. I mean, that's kind of really what turns me on. So not in a sexual way. God, get your mind out of the gutter, gentlemen.
I just laughed.
So without further ado, I'm going to go into a recap for those of you who have not seen it recently. So, the science fair is coming up this weekend, so Morty asks Rick to help him with his project, but Jerry, insecure about his intelligence, insists that it be a father-son experience, leaving Rick to drive Summer to her new job at a vintage thrift store. Inside the store, Rick immediately pegs Summer's new boss as the devil, who has been selling cursed items that promise to fulfill your innermost desires, but with a sinister catch. For example, Mr. Goldenfold is sold aftershave that makes him irresistible to women, but also renders him impotent. By studying a microscope from the devil's shop, Rick is able to manufacture a device that takes the curse element out of the products. Meanwhile, during their rather underwhelming science fair efforts, Jerry finds himself disagreeing with the news that Pluto is no longer a planet. Eventually, Jerry's stubbornness gets them abducted by King Flippinips of Pluto, who hails Jerry as a revolutionary scientist and parades him through Plutonian society. The devil and Summer are confused as to why the devil's wares are flying off the shelves until they realize that Rick has opened up Curse Purge Plus across the street that decurses the items en masse, thereby allowing people to achieve their desires without any negative ramifications. Back on Pluto, a real scientist named Scroopy Noopers informs Morty that corporations are gradually shrinking Pluto by overmining Pluto's core. By inhibiting the knowledge that Pluto has gotten so small as to no longer qualify as a planet, the Plutonians are not giving a wake-up call, and therefore the corporation can keep mining Pluto into oblivion. So in order to save the millions of lives on Pluto, Morty must convince his dad to admit Pluto is not a planet. With his life's purpose rendered obsolete by Rick, the devil and Summer file for bankruptcy, and having won, Rick burns the shop down out of boredom. When Jerry sees Scroopy Noopers being shipped off to Plutonimo Bay by his father, King Flippy Nips, he renounces his previous conviction and tells Plutonians that Pluto is not a planet. Summer helps the devil update his store called Needful Things into a Silicon Valley startup, but being the devil, he Zuckerbergs her out of the company once they get bought by Google. Jerry confesses to his son that he's not as smart as Rick, and Morty says he doesn't need to be because he's great at being his dad. And then at the end, having been dumped by the devil, Summer teams up with Rick, they get really jacked, and kick his ass. End of episode. So, the reason I love this episode so much is because I think it hits all the points of what makes Rick and Morty a truly unique show. So, first of all, it's hilarious. No real reason to dwell on that because it speaks for itself. Another thing I love about this episode is there are multiple literary allusions, three by my count, all of which are relevant. They're not just throwaways, so we'll see in shows like South Park, for example, that they'll do allusions to The Shining, but don't really, they're just random. They're just randomly doing a visual shout out to The Shining, but it doesn't really build off any of the themes being explored in that episode. But in this one, all of the literary allusions are very relevant and build on this idea of inverting horror tropes, in this case, the trope of deal with the devil. Thirdly, this episode deals with big ideas, and I think some of the best Rick and Morty episodes all deal with big ideas. In this case, we're dealing with good versus evil and how scientific reductionism fits into this discussion of what good and evil is. And finally, we have an A plot and a B plot, so that's the Devil's Shop and Pluto. These plots complement each other thematically. So to me, those things make this a masterpiece of an episode. Is there anything else that you guys appreciated about this episode that I didn't list off?
Well, I have a question about your third one. You said they complement thematically. I assume we're going to go through all of them, but...
Yeah, I mean, I can go through it now if you want. So in the B plot, which is the Plutonians thing, we see how faith in scientific method is necessary to fight corruption. So, for example, all the Plutonians are promoting Jerry's bizarre, nonsensical version of science where he just claims that Pluto's a planet without any evidence. So, you know, it's necessary for scientific method to fight corruption. You know, the big corporation on Pluto that is, you know, mining plutonium, mining the resources and destroying the planet. And that's where you can build the corollary between that and, you know, fracking or stuff like non-environmental stuff. But on the other hand, in the A plot, we see how complete faith in scientific method can dismantle moral frameworks. You know, in these horror stories, we see how, you know, if you mess with the natural order of things, or if you make a deal with the devil, if you uncritically pursue your desires without any consideration for consequence, then bad things will happen to you. But with science, as we see when Rick uses his device to take the curse element out of the items, thereby allowing people to just fulfill their desires with no negative ramifications, it basically dismantles any lesson that one would learn. But we'll get into that in more detail. But that's basically, I think, that the two plots both deal with scientific method as it works toward promoting a moral framework, but also as you know, one that can liberate us from corruption. So let's first start out with Rick versus the devil as kind of science versus religion, and also a meditation on good and evil. So the first thing I want to point out is that early in the episode, the show cleverly draws a parallel between the devil and Rick, as they're kind of both these different evil characters. So when Summer first describes the devil, he's kind of described as a variation of Rick. So Summer says, "My boss is this really smart, eccentric old man that treats me nice and values me." So the smart, eccentric old man thing is something you could say about both the devil and Rick, although I don't think you could say that Rick necessarily treats Summer nice and values her. So another thing that draws this comparison between Rick and the devil is one of my favorite moments. It's the evil laughing contest. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So when the devil tries to hawk a microscope that reveals things that are, quote, beyond comprehension, they start having an evil laughing contest where, you know, like Rick has an evil laugh and then the devil tries to have an even eviler laugh, and it just keeps going. It keeps going back and forth. So I this is super clever, because not only does this work in the sense that they're competing over who is more evil, which is an interesting concept that we'll dive into a little bit more, but there's also an element of Rick trivializing the devil's claim that there is in fact anything beyond comprehension, because as he says earlier in the episode, he's a man of science. So later in the episode, Rick takes the microscope and says to Morty, "Hey, Morty, let me ask you a question real quick. Does evil exist? And if so, can one detect and measure it?" Rhetorical question, Morty. The answer is yes. You just have to be a genius. So this whole idea of Rick using the device to take the curses out of the objects is a really clever commentary on how science kind of demystifies religion by reducing things like miracles or transcendent ideas like good and evil to explainable cause and effect. Thus, Rick versus the devil kind of becomes a statement on how scientific method is slowly rendering religion obsolete and ushering us into a more secular world. And my favorite part of the episode is it asks the question, but is this a good thing? Yeah. And I'm about to present my favorite line in all of Rick and Morty. And it is the devil saying, "People like Rick are making me obsolete. I mean, seriously, I may be the devil, but your grandpa is the devil."
Grandpa is the devil.
So let's break that down. What is that? What does this whole subplot mean to you guys? And what does that line say to you specifically?
Well, the second devil in that sentence is like in quotation marks, right?
I mean, yeah.
It's like I might be the actual devil, but he is what people think of as the devil incarnate.
So what is, break that down more, because I think I have a different interpretation of it.
you know, he literally is the devil.
Yes.
And then, but then people say, oh, you're the devil. Like you, that's just a saying people say. And so then the devil is saying that that Rick is more of what people think of as the devil than he is.
But why? What about Rick makes him more, quote, evil than this characterization of the devil?
Because at every fucking turn, Rick is outsmarting him and turning his usually reliable, pawn shop gimmick into using it against him. You know, he's just wrecking his shit up.
So you're saying that the devil's just saying that because he hates Rick?
He hates Rick and also probably thinks he's more evil than him.
Right.
And is jealous.
Okay.
But also is affected negatively by it and is, you know, he's getting a taste of his own medicine.
Sure. Okay, what do you think, Alec?
I kind of think he says Rick is the devil as in the symbol of the devil, not like I may be the physical devil, but Rick is pure evil or something like that. You know, everything the devil stands for is what Rick is. There's another moment where Rick opens the store across the street, or when he realizes it at least, and he says, "Diabolical son of a mother," and then he gets cut off as people come rushing into the store. But yeah, I think there is an element to Rick is this pure amoral science that in some ways can be as bad as sort of hocus pocusy kind of evil.
The way I read this, and the reason why I love this line so much, is because throughout Rick and Morty, we're always shown that Rick is this force of disillusionment, especially with religious frameworks, with any ideas of belief that aren't just broken down by science. But I think that this line about, hey, I may be the devil, but your grandpa's the devil, I think that what it's saying is that I might be the manifestation of evil, but the idea that science has the ability to destroy the distinction between good and evil is in itself the greatest evil.
Oh, that's interesting. I sort of like agree with the sentiment, but wonder if you're taking it a little bit too far. But again, like I agree with the sentiment.
Well, no, because if we talk about this goes into the other point is that this episode constantly is inverting the deal with the devil trope. And when we talk about deal with the devil, that's, you know, the kind of thing. So, for example, one of the allusions is the monkey paw by W.W. Jacobs. So this is the part in the episode where Summer has the monkey paw and she walks in and she sees the devil hanging himself. And so she uses the three wishes in a comically inefficient way to bring the devil, you know, to consciousness. And so in that short story, a family's given a monkey paw that grants them three wishes but punishes them for fucking with fate. So initially the patriarch uses the paw to get some cash, but then his son mysteriously dies. Then they try to wish for the son to come back to life, but he comes back a grotesque abomination. And so the lesson is there's all these moral refrains. There's these moral lessons to these stories, like don't try to fuck with your fate. Don't try to subvert the natural order of things. Be careful what you wish for. Don't give in to your desires without any critical consideration for other things that may happen.
Don't be greedy.
Right. So there's this kind of karmic retribution that comforts us because we know if people do evil things, then bad things will happen to them. If you try and fuck with the natural order of things, if you try and resurrect your son, then, you know, you're going to experience something that's even more catastrophic and disturbing. And so there's this comfort in that if we see someone doing something evil, we can take comfort in knowing that there's some sort of divine law in place that makes it so that those people will get their comeuppance. But with science, when science dispels this kind of moral framework and says that, oh no, people can do evil things and just get away with it, or people can do things that are not good and it doesn't even matter, that in itself is the greatest evil. To suggest that...
You mean to the devil or in general?
Well, it's up for debate.
Right.
It's up for debate. But that's why I think that this line is so brilliant, because once again, this is the only time, at least in my knowledge, and if I'm wrong, someone please email me, that the show suggests that this demystification, this... what's the word I'm looking for? This disillusionment that Rick and Morty is always capitalizing on could potentially make for a worse world.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because so throughout the show, there's no we don't really see a god necessarily, but here we are. We literally have the devil who seemingly knows what's going on in our reality, or is supposed to. And here he is saying that, yeah, like what you just said, that the science stuff that Rick works on could potentially be even worse than whatever the fuck he could come up with.
So I have a question. In all these stories, is the devil even evil? Because if you think about it, like, let's just think about Goldenfold for a second. When he has his breakdown, like, this is more or less the lesson of all these stories. Goldenfold says, "This aftershave made women want me, but it also made me impotent. How could I not see this coming? My lust, my greed, I deserve this." Moonlight, and Moonlight Sonata is playing in the background. Just, it's a beautiful little joke. And Rick stabs him with a little needle that says, that fixes it. And he says, "I haven't learned a thing." But the point is that people, greed is a common one. You're too greedy and you get the thing you want, but you pay a big price. That seems, you know, you were just saying karmic retribution, Jared. That seems to me very fair and not a bad thing to happen. So if anything, if you just look at the actions of the devil in a vacuum, yes, they're manipulative, but they're capitalizing off of the greed or the evilness of other people. Isn't it more evil for Rick to be let people become whatever they want with, you know, with no work, or, you know, they can live forever, they can become rich, they can do whatever they want?
This is why I love this line so much, because now we're talking about essentially a paradox in the distinction between good and evil. And I think that this paradox is best embodied by one of my favorite lines in what I consider to be the best musical since Singing in the Rain, which is the South Park movie. During the musical number in which Satan is singing about how he wants to go up to Earth, there's a line where he says, "But what is evil anyway? Without evil, there could be no good. So it must be good to be evil sometimes." And I think that this is what this is reflecting on, because as you said, by doing evil to people, the devil is teaching them a lesson about their greed or something like that, which makes them be self-reflective and it makes them learn something. So in a sense, by doing evil, good is done, or good is rendered, or people are taught to be more good. And that's why it's arguable in a kind of meta way that science, in dispelling any kind of notion of good and evil, or basically reducing what we consider to be good and evil to just, you know, molecules and particles that's very cold and indifferent, is the greater version of evil. Because by destroying evil, you also destroy good. And you can consider that the ultimate form of evil, which is what that line means to me. And you can argue that I'm looking into it too much, but hey, man, that's why this episode resonates with me so much.
I think you can totally read into it just like how you did it, but I think that my interpretation is what the writers were thinking.
Just like, oh, you're...
Personally.
Death of the author, man. Fuck the writers. Okay, so now I'm going to ask you guys if the question is, is the world better off dispelling biblical notions of good and evil, or is it better off with the kind of cold application and cold faith in science? Does the episode give us an answer which one is better? I'm going to read the last lines of the episode, and I want to know what you guys think. So Summer asks, "Did we learn a lesson here that I'm not seeing?" And Rick says, "Not sure." Summer says, "Maybe in a bigger way, Mr. Needful gave us both what we really wanted, because I always was jealous of you hanging out with Morty, and you didn't realize how much you valued my approval." Rick says, "No, that's dumb." Summer's like, "Yeah, not satisfying." Then Rick says, "I'll tell you what, if satisfaction is what you're after, I think I might have an idea." And then they get jacked, kill the devil, and basically then in the after credits sequence,
they beat the shit out of Nazis and
Nazis, bullies, Westboro Baptist people,
and someone who's mean
and people
dog.
Who are mean to their dogs. So these are what I would argue are, at least to the writers, of course here I'm a hypocrite because I just said death of the author, but these are unambiguous depictions of evil, right?
Yeah.
Nazis, Westboro Baptist Church, people who are mean to their dogs, bullies. So in a sense, do they end up learning a lesson? Because on the one hand, what Summer learns in the end is don't trust the devil. The devil is evil because he's Zuckerbergs are out of her company.
So I'm sorry, ask that question again.
Do they end up learning a lesson? Does the episode make a statement about is the world better off completely dispelling biblical notions of good and evil in favor of science, vice versa? Or am I just overthinking it?
No, I think that one of the lessons is that evil people deserve to get the shit beat out of them.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is that the devil reasserts his evilness, because whereas Rick took the evilness away from him, you know, because, oh, well, now I can't ruin people's lives because the devices in my shop are only helping people now. He is able to reassert his evilness by cheating Summer out of her job and Zuckerberging her. And then, in a sense, at the end, Rick and Summer get to defeat real evil. They get to fight a true embodiment of evil multiple times, not only with the devil, but with all those other things we just mentioned.
Well, one thing I thought was interesting was that it's not like Rick, you know, shot themselves up with some serum or whatever, that some scientific thing that to where they could easily do it. They worked hard and worked out for a long time to, you know, and went through the work to get jacked up, to go beat those people up. I thought that was a very deliberate choice that I don't really...
They also
really,
did steroids, though.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they did have a shot where they're...
Well, yeah, but that's just... The steroids is something that anyone can take. You know, it's not like a...
Well, we don't know what's in it.
It's not like a magic Rick.
I mean, it could be argued that Rick is making super-duper steroids.
No, but well, okay. I think Ryan's point is they still had to do that. You can't just take steroids and get ripped. You have to take steroids and then go to the gym a lot.
They worked out hard. Yes. Yeah, I mean, basically, Rick should, with everything else we've ever seen him do, he should be able to just, you know, hit a button and then, oh, wow, I have, you know, I can beat the shit out of anyone. Why did they have to physically beat them up? Why couldn't they go to all those people and shoot them, you know?
I feel like beating people up is sometimes can be psychologically fulfilling, whereas murdering people is usually always going to give you some sort of post-traumatic stress.
Okay.
Alec would know.
I mean, I don't know, but
I haven't really thought about that.
Like, I don't know, like, the thought of me punching someone, not that I go around punching people, but, like, thought of me punching someone, I'm like, okay, cool. Thought of me shooting anyone, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that.
So, I mean, so is the lesson at the end that, like, it not only should assholes deserve to get the shit beat out of them, but, man, it feels good and you should do it too? Like, and don't just...
Yeah, I get, it's like we knife? shouldn't dispel evil. We should fight evil.
Okay, there we go. So it's a literally fight evil.
That's the way I interpret it. Okay, so let's move on to the B plot. This is the Plutonian plot. So Alec, why don't you start this one off, because I think you were talking about it earlier.
Yeah, so we have Jerry wanting to help Morty with his science fair project because he's intellectually insecure. And I think the line at the beginning, which we've talked about a lot, but I guess I sort of forgot the context, was Jerry says it's kind of a tradition for fathers to help their sons at science fair. And then Rick says, well, scientifically, traditions are an idiot thing, which kind of sets up the whole rest of the episode. But anyway, Morty has to...
Well, can you talk a little bit more about that, how that sets up the rest of the episode?
Well, just traditions are an idiot thing. Then you get into the good versus evil thing we're talking about, where Rick is dealing with the literal devil, sort of like traditional, you know, church tradition or traditional notions of good versus evil, all of that.
There's also the tradition of calling Pluto
a
planet.
Yeah, also a tradition. So Morty points out that they don't have to make a little diorama of Pluto because that's what they've decided to make, even though Rick can invent butter robots. But Jerry's like, no, Pluto's a planet. And then the Plutonians figure this out, sort of abduct him and bring him there as this kind of prophet to spread the word that don't listen to anyone. It's not a dwarf planet. It's a full-blown planet.
Well, he's not really a prophet necessarily. Yeah, he's more of like the best earth scientist. Right,
right? Yeah. By prophet,
yeah,
I
they
just
paint
like
him. They paint him as a genius earth scientist.
Right.
This is sort of nitpicky, but one thing that I was thinking about is, like, you were saying the word scientific method and Jerry denying it earlier, but Pluto being a planet is not really a scientific method question or even a purely scientific question. It's like a classification question. It's scientists being like, oh, how do we set criteria? It's not like there's the law of gravity where you can sort of prove this. You sort of just have to decide how to, like, divide things up.
I think that's what makes it so funny, though, is because it's so, like, arbitrarily dumb.
Jerry's point, you mean.
So, okay, yeah, you're probably right, but I think the overall criticism of this subplot is more dependent on the idea that, once again, the Plutonians and King Flippynips are definitely stand-ins for people that either selectively choose what science they want to believe in to advance their whatever corporate agenda or political agenda. So I see what you're saying, but I think that for the sake of the, I guess, the subtext of the episode, we should think of, at least I think they're thinking of the classification of Pluto as a planet as a matter of science. Because then it makes it that Jerry is right. Then if it's just a matter of classification,
well,
and there's not really...
I will say on the classification note, you know, the reason that it's no longer a planet is, you know, once our telescopes got better, we're like, oh shit, all these things we consider asteroids or other things are bigger than Pluto. And, you know, Pluto doesn't really have a lot of the categories we traditionally sort of associate with planets. So we have to, unless we want to call this other shit we want to call a planet, we have to call it a dwarf planet. So it's not like it's just necessarily bullshit, but I think the point is, to get back to what you're trying to talk about, Jared, is that Jerry's not sort of being there like, oh, actually, like, here's my other classification model and why it makes sense. He's just like, no, it's debatable, therefore I'm right. And I think what you're getting at is that this episode is really about climate change deniers, and that's often the argument. They're like, well, some scientists disagree, so this is the idea I like, so I'm going to just go with the flow.
Right. So one of the details that I like in this episode is the Plutonians, their eyes are crosses.
Yeah.
Which I think is not so subtle way to link them to like fundamentalist Christians or the religious right who are skeptical towards, and I'm going to say it again, scientific method. And I think this whole plot kind of mirrors how it's, I don't know, it's hard to say whether it's specifically the right or it's just the rich will find one scientist that agrees with the stance that advances their agenda and then put them on a pedestal to like kind of inflate the relevance of their opinion.
Yeah, so this is why I was thinking it's even more apt in 2017. So obviously climate change and the debate about that was relevant, still is relevant. That really hasn't changed, except so, but when you get into like anti-vaxxers or flat earthers or a lot of those other sort of very fringe movements, they'll find it's not purely sort of like as bad as Jerry just saying like, well, this is what I believe. They'll find that one scientist to be like, see, there was this one study published somewhere and like, who cares that maybe it was paid for by a company that also supports this agenda. Like, I'm sure it's fine. And people just sort of selectively taking that information.
Yeah. So especially other things like fracking. So, for example, Morty says when Morty's trying to convince his dad that he needs to condemn the idea that Pluto is a planet or else he's putting in jeopardy the lives of all Plutonians, he says, Dad, did you think about the recent report published by the Pluto Science Reader linking Pluto quakes, sinkholes, and surface shrinkage to deep core plutonium drilling? So it's just like a fracking joke.
Right.
This whole sort of subplot again gets at me because this is what we're seeing a lot where, you know, with fake news and basic facts and flat earthers, it's sort of like everything's up for debate again. And obviously I'm pro like debating a lot of things, but there's kind of a false debate that happens. Like, is this episode saying anything beyond just like taking jabs at like people who don't believe in climate change, for instance? Like, is it giving us a smarter, better model to how to think about these things? Because I'm not sure it is.
Well, it's worth mentioning that this episode was before flat earthers, before we...
Flat earthers have been around for thousands of years.
No, but they're getting more popular. Yeah, they weren't...
Right, I guess
they weren't as popular to go in weird internet...
They didn't have the internet before.
They did not have the internet.
Yeah, to me, this is just a kind of jab at climate skeptics joke. I think that's kind of it. Just because it was season one, it was way before we were in this kind of epistemological clusterfuck we're in right now.
That's a great word. Can we say that all the time?
Sure. All right. That's it for this episode. Now we're going to go into the mailbag. I believe Alec has some stuff picked out.
I do. And if anyone would like to send us your questions, you can hit us up at squanch@wisecrack.co. Again, that's squanch@wisecrack.co. You can also hit us up on Twitter @wisecrack and use the hashtag #thesquanch. So this is a follow-up from Jim, who sent us an email last week that we read, or 2 weeks ago that we read, whether or not Rick was an engineer or scientist. He says, hey guys, thanks for addressing my question last week. I agree, post-science is a good term. When I said he uses known science, he's talking about Rick, I meant science known to him, if maybe not to others. You guys did bring up several good examples of Rick discovering things, but it's almost always to solve an immediate problem he's trying to overcome, not to answer some questions he's curious about. Like most engineers with advanced degrees, degrees. I did research and discovered new things and would have been considered a, quote, scientist by most people. But now I spend time building things based on what I've discovered in the past, whereas a career scientist spends all their time discovering and publishing things, not building things, Jim. First of all, it's super cool. I like to say to Jared that a lot of our fans are a lot more cool and interesting than we are. People with advanced degrees in science.
Yeah, very educated people.
And we got a great email from someone in the Peace Corps on the South Park podcast. Anyway, what do you guys think?
So the thing I'll say is that I think, you know, this is his domain. He probably knows a lot better than I do the distinction between an engineer and a scientist. I will say that what we're discussing with this episode in terms of thematically, it makes a much richer point to call Rick a scientist in order to make this, once again, this philosophical distinction between religion and science or transcendent ideas and more empirical ideas. So it helps to make it a scientist. And the other thing I'll say is that in a 22-minute show, just for sake of time, they probably wouldn't want to show him experimenting and discovering new things. So I guess for most shows that are concerned with narrative economy, you could argue that the scientists are all engineers.
Yeah, and I'll add that it just goes in the long-standing tradition of TV shows where you just accept that the people are what they say they are. You know, Rick's a scientist. Okay, he's doing science when we don't see him, and then he's also a good engineer to boot.
That's a great lead into one more sort of engineer versus scientist question email. So an email from Paul is sort of following up on this question. I want to strongly say I agree with that sentiment that Rick is an engineer rather than a scientist. It ties into a theory I've been harboring for quite some time that Rick isn't really a genius or an inventor. The only reason we assume this about Rick is because this is what he tells us. In fact, he repeats it all the time. His claims also grow over time. First, he calls himself a genius, then the smartest man in the galaxy, and eventually a god. He also always wears a lab coat, which is not very practical unless you work in an actual lab and care about hygiene, but very useful if you want to bluntly announce to everyone you're a scientist. In the very first episode...
This is a great long con by Dan Harmon.
In the very first episode, we see Rick travel to an advanced reality to get a medicine to fix Morty's legs. We know the technology he used to stop time for 6 months was stolen from the testicle head Time Lords. From background scenes, we know the Meeseeks box is being used by other aliens. There is plenty of evidence to say that Rick didn't invent any of the technology he uses, maybe even his teleporting device, which also is a technology used by the galactic government. Crucially, with access to the teleporter, Rick doesn't have a need to invent anything because everything has been invented somewhere already. I think he's onto something. And I will also say in, well, that fake flashback, but maybe there's some truth to it. He's given the portal technology by another Rick. So what the fuck did he invent, guys?
Well, I mean, that was what I was going to bring up is that in, now granted with the Szechuan sauce episode, that whole scene in which Rick witnesses the death of his family.
It's fake and bullshit.
Yeah, you could say it's fake. You could say some of it's real. You can say there are, you know, vibrations of realness to it. But yeah, I mean, he says that Rick, maybe not this Rick, but a Rick discovers the time travel thing, which would make Rick a scientist, or at least a Rick a scientist. I mean, I guess you could say that the initial Rick is the only scientist and every other Rick is just an engineer because one Rick discovered all this and the rest is just putting it into practice.
Yeah.
But I do think that Rick, whatever Rick we're talking about, one of the Ricks did discover all this technology. I do think we're at least meant to believe that. I don't think that he's stealing it from someone else. And also, I don't quite remember when we're told that he stole the time travel technology from the testicle monsters. I know that the testicle monsters are definitely the police of that kind of technology, but I don't know if that necessarily means that he stole it from them. Do you guys remember any indication of that?
Nope.
No, I don't remember. I'm trying to think back, but I'm drawing a blank. If anyone remembers, send us an email.
Actually, there's one email, or rather a message that we got from Facebook that I think connects well with what we've discussed today, but also clarifies a point I was trying to make in the previous podcast that I just wasn't doing well with. So this email is from James E. He said, "Hey, Wisecrack, just listen to the Rick's Must Be Crazy episode of The Squanch and had some thoughts. The Summer B plot to me was a fantastic allegory for the amorality of science, that there is neither capital G good or capital B bad. It is a tool for solving whatever problem we deem worthy of grant money. But who or what gets to decide which problems need solving? God, politicians, scientists, and how should we go about doing so? In a universe where an almighty representation of perfect science, aka Rick, exists, the real conflict lies not in problem solving, but in the ambiguity of morality in relation to such an unfeeling ethos. In a world where you can solve any problem on command, how do you decide what needs fixing and what lengths are admissible toward that end? Summer sure has no idea, neither does the ship, and neither do most of us. The ship is just following orders, and Summer is a child holding a bazooka. All the power, but no idea where to aim it, and the fear that entails. This illustrates a lot of scientific endeavors and Jeff Goldblum's "you were so excited that you could that you never stopped to think if you should" sentiment in Jurassic Park. Science is a well-made sword that is only as useful as the wielder can make it, and that we are often lackluster swordsmen and likely to lose toes because of that. My main takeaway was that science needs a well-calibrated moral framework to not wreak havoc on us all, T-1000 style, and that without it, we may all end up likely be piles of mincemeat and Kevlar. Thanks for the great podcast. Love hearing what you have to say on my favorite show's piece.
I've already accepted that fate, personally.
That was a dope email.
We're so fucked.
That was a dope email. Thank you, James. Yeah. And by the way, you can also reach us on Facebook, which James did.
One thing I'll say that I think James is getting at is there's sort of been some shitting on philosophy by people like Neil deGrasse Tyson being like, oh, it's useless. Science is, you know, philosophy in the times of Aristotle used to have some overlap with science. But now people are like, what's the point? You know, it's not going to help us do physics. But there's this whole question of what should we be researching? What are the ethics involved? You know, if you're wielding that sword, how do you wield it? And yeah, this is my humble defense of philosophy, is that while science is super cool and important, also, this stuff is important for those exact reasons.
To shape the minds and hearts of the scientists.
And just to inform the choices that you make. I mean, I don't think science can really motivate you to treat people better, to put yourself in other people's shoes, which I think is super important for the choices that you make. So, absolutely.
So, there's an email from Nicole.
Thanks, Nicole.
So first off, I love the podcast. I'm so glad that you guys decided to get into some oldies to pass the time. Jared, you noted that you would be bored and depressed if you didn't have something fulfilling to pass your time. This is in regards to the Ricks Must Be Crazy, the Google boxes. I don't think that the metaphor of work versus Stairmaster works in this case. We should be thinking more in terms of quality of work. You guys are doing work that you like to do. Being able to watch shows that you like and present commentary as a job is closer to life without the Google boxes. I work at a sales job. I'm a cog in a wheel, or to be more specific, I'm on an endless Stairmaster trying to reach the top of a thing that's keeping me in one place while tiring me out. People with their own brain, Kyle, have found a way off of life Stairmaster to be able to find more fulfilling work, entrepreneurship, YouTube, podcast, blogging, or writing a cool cartoon like Rick and Morty. We should all be working towards finding our Kyle to get off the Stairmaster. Keep squanching, brothers. Nikki.
Oh, I agree with everything she said, but if she's talking about me personally, I mean, I did have numerous jobs before Wisecrack. And
Some really shitty ones,
which perhaps if you guys are interested, I'll tell you some stories about shitty jobs I've had. A lot of them, or at least one of them, in the food service industry. But I will say that for me personally, even when it was a job I hated, I would still be more miserable with nothing to do. I mean, that's just me personally. But to everything that Nicole said, I completely agree about the greater, you know, automation, universal basic income discussion. But I'm just saying, for me personally, the idea of having nothing to do is frightening. Some people are good at making themselves do things and making themselves active. I'm not one of those people. I kind of have to force myself to do stuff, or at least, you know, like adhere to some outside force that's going to force me to do something, or else I'll just like get too stuck in my head and wallow away in sadness for way too long.
My hierarchy goes, at the bottom is doing something I don't want to do and is shitty, and then not having anything to do.
You would rather not have anything to do than do something shitty?
Yes, all the time.
I mean, obviously, if it was something really shitty, I would agree with you.
Like shoveling shit.
Yeah, or like, yeah, I mean, something like truly horrific. But I mean, if it was a shitty food service job or a shitty marketing job or something like that, I would still prefer that over nothing.
But you have a machine that literally makes all of your needs met all of a sudden, and you're unhappy about that? You don't have to do anything?
I mean, I don't know because I'm not in that situation, but I would imagine...
Pretend you are.
I would imagine I would be miserable, yeah.
That is insane.
I know. Well, because, well, I mean, once all your desires are fulfilled, then what do you do?
You are happy that you don't have anything to do.
And maybe, see, like, but this is the difference between you and me, Ryan. You're a Buddhist monk. I'm a tortured soul.
Just imagine being a caveman you know, and you're having to work every day. You have to wake up every day and fucking
Cavemen don't even understand the concept of boredom.
Right. Yeah. If you were for a day and all of a sudden you had your make everything,
they don't know what angst
is.
They don't know what ennui is. They don't know what depression is. They're just literally getting through life. And I'm just saying that, yeah, having to fight for your food every day, that definitely sucks on its own level. Mm-hmm. But having nothing to do sucks on a different level. I won't say it's better or worse. I can't say it's worse because I've never had to, you know, forage for my own food or anything like that. So I can only say that I imagine it would suck on its own unique level. All right, well, that's going to do it today for The Squanch. Another reminder, if you guys have the time, we'd be so thankful if you guys left us a review on iTunes. It means so much to us, and it really helps us continue going, keep afloat. And I've done it myself. Writing 5 stars feels really good. So, you know, go ahead and give us a 5-star review and make yourself feel better. And us. Another reminder, we have our South Park podcast that we are doing right now. And it's a super interesting season. I've actually fallen more in love with South Park over the last couple months than I thought I ever would. So if you're not caught up on season 21, I recommend you start watching it and listen to the podcast. We also have another podcast, which is Thug Notes Get Lit, which Greg, aka Sparky Sweets PhD, is breaking down some of the best books ever written. So definitely check that out. And lastly, Ryan and I and another writer researcher named Austin are releasing the Wisecrack movie podcast soon. We've got 3 episodes recorded. We're going to release those soon. And then we want to start getting emails from you suggesting what movies we should do next. Ryan and I are huge cinephiles.
Damn right.
And a lot of the crew that we work with are also huge into movies. And we're really excited to dive into some of our favorites. So be on the lookout for that. Other than that, that's it for today, guys. Thank you guys for listening. Wubba lubba dub dub. Goodbye.
Wubba lubba hail Satan. Goodbye.
Squanch you later.